Hello and welcome to another episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 82 for September 27th, 2012. I am Mike, your host for this week, and I am joined by Jason Love. Say hi.
Hello.
Locke Vincent.
What's up?
And our esteemed leader, Nick Paleo.
Hello.
Pulling off the power seat.
How are we doing this week, gentlemen?
Just grand.
Oh.
Just grand.
Stoked.
I may or may not be coming down with something. I don't know yet. I feel like a ticking time bomb of illness right now.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
All you better sickies. Home. You should get better health care.
Well, now.
Yeah.
Let's just hope it isn't a strange African virus that struck Nick and I, because that was no fun.
Brutal.
No
that was
fun
really
at all.
Brutal.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's not it, but it seems like everyone at my work has been getting that.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, Mike, we missed you last week, so it's nice to see your actual moving face this time.
Yeah, last week I was kind of perched on a toilet instead of podcasting.
This is what I had last week. That's all I got.
Better than perched on a curb, right, sir?
Yeah, so. That's true.
But yeah.
All right.
Jeez, that's such an inside joke. I can't
believe
you went there.
And that's episode 82, folks.
Nothing but class in these parts. So we all like to play games, and some of us have gotten shiny new systems and stuff. So let's talk about what we've been playing. And let's go with Nick first.
All right, let's see. I've been playing a lot of Syndicate this past weekend and whatnot. Playing through that for a review. And I am really enjoying it. I've been playing it on the 360. And I think the game does an excellent job of making you feel like a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Our review is going live tomorrow, so there are more details in it. But, you know, basically, aesthetically, it's just got this really great look to it. And, you know, the whole concept of it is that, like, everybody's connected in the world, so everything you can kind of get information on, everything from, like, you just walk around, like, you see a plant, and it's, like, plant. And you're like, yes, it is a plant. Thank you.
My favorite part is anybody who isn't chipped just says hobo.
Yeah, they're hobos.
It's pretty
great.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so the beauty of the game, though, really is its gunplay. It's just really, really satisfying gunplay. The guns really feel deadly, and then you combine it with the powers in the game, which are called breach powers.
Mm-hmm.
Let you do things like you hack other people's minds, and you can convince them to do things like shoot themselves in the face, or pull out a grenade and blow up themselves and everybody around them. Things like that. So that whole aspect is really cool. The campaign's about 6 hours or so long. The story's okay, I guess. It's nothing great, but it's got some really solid voice acting.
Oh, yeah, Brian Cox is great.
Yeah. And then the co-op side of things, there's an entire co-op campaign. And it's really more like a co-op mode, kind of like Brink. There's a loose story in each mission and stuff, but you're really not paying attention to it. You're playing the missions to unlock weapons, customize your character, unlock abilities for your agent, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of stuff to unlock and do. It's basically, it breaks down like this. Like, for example, there might be 20 weapons you can use in co-op.
Oh.
Each weapon has 5 or 6 upgrade slots. So an upgrade slot, to unlock the upgrade slot, you have to earn weapon tokens, or application tokens, I think they're called. So you earn so many of those, then you unlock the slot. Then you have to use the weapon to earn experience to actually unlock the modification to use. So basically, I figured it out today when I was writing the review. You probably have to play through 70 missions or so.
17 or 70?
70.
Oh.
Yeah.
See,
to unlock every single modification for every weapon.
Wow.
That kind of reminds me of, what was that game that I reviewed that had me mind-boggled? Oh, yeah, Dynasty Warriors Gundam 2 or whatever, where you basically, it was the same deal, where you had to play through a mission to unlock something to go play another mission so you could get another part to combine it so you could actually use it.
Yeah, like, you're never restricted from doing anything in the mission. Like, the other thing, you have to beat the previous missions to get to the next ones. But the upgrades and stuff are really just to play it on the harder difficulties and stuff like that, and to kind of customize your character. Like, what happens when you play the missions is players kind of fall into these, like, roles almost. So, like, one person will kind of be, like, your healer or your support character, because you can do things like you can shield teammates, you can do group heals, and the buffs you can do. You can do things like you can do, like, an EMP blast with, like, temporarily disable people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of customization, a lot of things you can do to build your character the way you want and stuff like that. So it's pretty addictive, and it carries that same really satisfying gunplay that the single player campaign has. So
plus it has the smartest sniper rifle design ever.
yeah. I mean, I guess it's pretty fun.
Well, you know, it's the, you know, in any other game you have that sniper rifle. You just kind of tote it around and wait for an opportune moment, and in this you could just flip it over to the full auto mode and unload people.
Yeah.
Plus, shooting fools through walls behind cover never gets old.
Yeah. You can switch to the piercing round stuff. There's a couple weird design decisions, especially in the campaign. Like there's a thing where like you run and you break through walls, and like the tutorial mission kind of. You know, it shows you this, and I think you use it twice in the entire game.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, that's kind of weird. It's like, whoever programmed that in the game must be pretty pissed off that they didn't use that feature, you know, that much. But
it's kind of weird. Like Deus Ex Human Revolution had that one augment where you could get strong and punch through walls.
That was awesome.
It was, but it was, again, like, you used it three times to, like, snag three guys.
If there
wasn't really cool.
If there wasn't a door, I made a door, so.
I was gonna say, Nick told me he used that to kill just about everybody he killed in the game once he unlocked
it. Yeah, I was using that all the time, so.
See, I was a big fan of the jump down from a high ledge and,
Icarus.
Yeah, that was
now,
pretty BA.
Now, with Syndicate, the sort of reboot, remake, whatever you want to call it, does it capture the feeling of... you know, cyberpunk, or, you know, crime, underworld sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think they do a lot of things that they throw back references to the original Syndicate. One of the things I like is there's a lot of civilians in the levels and stuff.
Okay.
You know, which is good, because there's, you know, lots of collateral damage if you want. So, you know, I was happy to see that, and obviously the...
You have a Persuadatron.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Persuadatron is basically one of your main breaches.
Yeah.
So that's good, too. There's a good variety, too, really, in the missions themselves in terms of, like, how it looks. Like, you've got that kind of, like, mirror's edge, real clean-looking areas and stuff. And then you also have the real grungy, like, New York alleyway kind of areas and stuff like that. So
there's
a pretty good mix.
That's cool.
But, yeah, review will be up by the time this podcast goes out, so you can check it out, you know. I'm going to give it a pretty good rating, I think, overall. There are some lock-up issues, like you can't be in party chat in co-op because it locks up the game.
Of course it does.
Which is really bad.
That's a standard feature, I think.
Yeah. So they know about some of the issues, and they're gonna patch it. So besides that, the only thing I've been playing my Vita, still loving that. A lot of Uncharted, Lumines, and Dungeon Hunter Alliance, basically those three on it.
Yeah,
nice.
It's good. It's just, I don't know, it really is like a console experience on a handheld.
Yeah, are there a lot of upgrades for it? Because I think it was yesterday night or something like that, I kept on seeing BA Penguin signed on, signed off, signed on, signed off, signed off, signed on, signed on.
No, that is the issue where it will just like hit your Wi-Fi network and go up and down and up and down and up and down until you actually launch something that utilizes the connection.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does it on my Wi-Fi all the time. And I'll go into the Wi-Fi settings and it'll connect to my SSID and I see it go. And if I wait a second, I'll see it dim out and it'll light up again and dim out. But anytime I've done anything online with it, it's a steady connection. It has to be a quirk of it right now.
Yeah, it does somewhere. Like, for instance, it doesn't connect you to your friends list until I think you bring up the friends list app once.
Yeah.
Like you can't view your, like, so, and then once you do that and it's running in the background, then you'll get the notifications that friends sign in and sign out and stuff like that on the Vita.
It's really weird.
Yeah, it's got a couple quirks like that. But, I mean, like I said, overall, I'm really loving everything it does. You know, the trophy support, the party chat stuff is good. It just, you know, Uncharted is more or less a constant beat. If you take out some of the stupid like, motion control, meta control things it does, I do, you know, I really do love, yeah, the charcoal rubbings, yeah, they can go fuck themselves, because it's just a pain in the ass.
No, wait, here's the, let's rotate it.
Turn it, yeah, look, turn I'm looking, it, I'm looking. Brush it off, yeah. Blow it turn off.
Turn it.
Yeah,
the only cool Vita thing that Uncharted did so far was where it had you hold it up to the light.
Oh, like I didn't see that part. Yeah,
there's a part where you get like this like encoded message, uh-huh. And it says you know I think I see something. Hold it up to the light, and then the system is like. Hold your Vita next to a light. It's like,
hey, so, dummy.
I do like they're desperately trying to get that recapture my youth with the Star Tropics letter.
Yeah.
And but you actually have to take the Vita and hold it up to a bright light, and then it will like fade in this invisible ink message.
Type your Vita in a body of water.
Yeah, I wait for the day. Like, you can only view this message in liquid. So. Yeah. Dump honey on your Vita.
I thought that was really cool. And there is actually one moment in the game. There are two moments in the game where they use the touch screen really well, and the motion sensor is actually.
I like the touch screen for the climbing mechanic and stuff. Like
that's okay. I still kind of prefer the normal Uncharted mode.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a little bit away, but like when you see this big long freaking thing of all these ledges, you're like, yeah, whatever, go.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. There's a moment where there's a level that takes place in you're in a canoe, and you have there's two people. There's two people paddling, and you alternate like left and right. On the touch screen, and it will grow everybody. Yeah, it's kind of neat. Like it's a cool use, and you don't have to sit there and swipe at your screen for extended periods of time.
And wait, then Locke, you got a Vita lock? I just saw this in the notes.
No, I've been playing my friends though. I wanted to see it.
Okay.
I tried it on the weekend, and I that is one sexy piece of hardware. It's
yes, it is.
It's really nice. I was surprised at how light it was.
Do I need to do the yes. Jessica Chobot?
Of course.
No, please don't. No.
No.
A dual lift.
I won't.
But
I think everybody should get copies of Mass Effect 3 and lick it and just tweet at her.
Sure.
Like, look, here we go.
We can do a site-wide thing like that.
I'm going to lick mine and then send it to space. Then when it comes back down, I'm going to lick it again.
I mean, you see that the one that fell from space and landed in the tree all the funny crap people were saying after that, where the hashtag Mass Effect tree came out of that.
I like it.
Yeah. They're like, that's no tree, that's an Ent graveyard. Treebeard wins again. Yeah. You know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but no, the Vita is pretty cool. I only tried a couple games for a couple minutes each because I just wanted to kind of go through and get a buffet of everything, and really impressed with it. I'm not going to get one right away because the games still aren't there for me, but I was definitely surprised.
Luminous goes a long way towards being the game I can play all the time.
Yeah, it's still kind of funny because that's what the PSP one was. You know, it was a Luminous machine, but
yeah. Well, the Vita is a Luminous machine.
Well,
and I'm completely okay with that.
I think at launch it is, but the PSP did come out with way better games along. You know, after a couple of years, so once that happens, then I'm definitely sold.
You know, it actually looks. I don't know if Nick talked about this, but PSP games look phenomenal. On that, I picked up Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, and that game looks so damn good on that huge screen.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like,
it's pretty great.
The couple of things I played, like Wipeout and Super Stardust Delta, were both really smooth and really nice to play and great controls. The other thing I played was Escape Plan, which was a nice, cool. It's a bit more than a tech demo, but it was
kind of iPhone-y, right?
Yeah, it was neat to see that, and again, just being really, really smooth on the screen and super intuitive with the controls. I didn't have huge hopes for the Vita, but after using it, I'm pretty impressed with it.
I'm waiting for Persona 4 Portable to come out, then I'll be hopping on that Vita.
Exactly.
Yeah, Persona 4 the Golden.
But
yeah.
I was actually disappointed when they announced Persona 4 Arena is coming to the States that they weren't going to put it on Vita, because that seems like it would be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, fighting games work really well on the Vita. And when you launch with a Blaze Blue and Marvel vs. Capcom 3, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about the dual, like, you can play on your PS3 and on your Vita? How do you feel about that, if you're going to use it at all, and sort of the pricing structure, if you think they're going to do anything with that? Just because I find it kind of weird to have to buy both copies, you know, at full price, so...
Well, I think that for anybody that bought Wipeout and activated the online pass, if you have HD and HD Fury on your PS3 already, they give you the Vita version.
Nice.
When it releases. So I don't think you're always going to have to necessarily buy, like, yeah, you had to buy Wipeout 2048, and yeah, you had to buy Wipeout HD back in the day. But they're basically gifting you another copy of the game, so that's okay, and it's kind of a nice bonus. But unless there's a compelling reason,
yeah,
to buy both, I don't think I will. I'll pick whichever one I think. Like if it's kind of like a quick hit game, I'll probably just get the Vita version. If it's something I'm going to want to be sitting down on my couch and playing for a long stretch of time, I'll get the PS3 version.
Well, the thing is too, if you get the PS3 version, you can play it on your Vita anyway through Remote Play.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that is true. Is Nick, you've been playing Dungeon Hunter Alliance, right? Like, is that something that you would prefer to play on one or the other?
Play for 99 cents on my iPhone.
Yeah, if it wasn't $40.
Yeah,
I actually think I like the portable version better, just because, like, I can kind of pick it up, do a couple quests, and kind of put it down, and, I like that kind of game in general.
Yeah.
The co-op in it works really well. It's easy to find people online and in the same areas and making your game open and stuff like that. Yeah. But, it comes down to, like, Gameloft published the PSN version and they published the iOS version. And yeah. Ubisoft decided to publish this one and, powers up.
Isn't Gameloft part of Ubisoft in some weird way?
That I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Gameloft is like a subsidiary.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it just seems...
I have a friend who works at Gameloft. I could just ask him.
It seems interesting. Like, it's an interesting idea, but I don't know if it's that realistic. Like, if I'm going to buy two copies. The only, like, really practical time I could see that working is like if you had like a sports game that you had to leave for whatever reason in the middle of. But other than that, I don't know. It's
I could see using like if you had PSN Plus, you get that the cloud saves. Like if you have like a really long form RPG or something that was released on both, and you could basically sync up over the cloud, get your save, and just keep going when you're on the road. Might be kind of nice, especially for like tactical RPGs or anything that's really segmented into really discrete chunks of time.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that could work really well.
The what is it? Metal Gear Solid doing the transferring kind of a thing.
No, I think it's good that they're showing that, like, that you can play, like Wipeout, you can play against people on the console and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if any developers do things where, like, the Vita version of a game does a different aspect of the game than the console version.
Yeah, and kind of forces you to play one or the other.
Like you would take up a different role. So the Vita people might be like on the might be playing on the ground in a game or whatever, and then the console people might have a different view, and they might be I was talking about that Ironclad game today that was announced, and they have and they have the two different characters in. They have a commander, which is like your strategy view and stuff, and they have the heroes, which is more like the traditional MOBA kind of stuff. So it'd be interesting if someone could come up with, something like that, where Vita people are doing this and console people are doing this, just because it works a little better on the Vita like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be a sweet.
That'd make some really interesting couch co-op sessions too, to have like everybody there.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Do it Wii U style. A bunch of people on Vitas and someone on the PS3.
Like, I think there was like a tech demo where someone had like a Kinect game and an iOS game, right? And the Kinect person was like flying the ship, and the person on the iOS had like a gunner control on the ship, and he had a different camera he could see. So like stuff like that would be really neat.
Yeah, definitely stuff like that is really cool. Another example, I guess, after you talking about that is like the new Armored Core, where one person, is the commander and they're giving out orders, and then the rest maybe, go and fight. So, we'll see. I don't know. I want it to do well. I think, I don't know. Part of me wants dedicated handhelds to survive, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think they'll survive. They might not be as premium an item as they are now in the future, but I guess we'll see. Let's speed through this real quick. Jason, what have you been playing?
Surprise, surprise. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. I have now put 75 hours into that game and completed 170-some-odd quests.
Boy, there's something wrong with you. I like that game, but I'm not going to play it for 75 hours.
You crazy.
Son,
get yourself some Skyrim.
It is my Skyrim. That's what I'm playing for that. Man. But it's fun. I've really been enjoying it. I've enjoyed the kind of, I think you and I were talking about this, some Mike, of the main quest story isn't all that great, but the side
interesting
like the world that they developed, like those little side missions are a lot better. Like the House of Ballad storyline.
I think that like the little miniature stories in it are pretty interesting. My problem with it, if I have one, is that it tries to replicate too much of either a hardcore RPG or an MMO. I'm kind of unsure which angle they're going at, but it's like having to constantly repair your gear is a pretty annoying thing to put in a single player game. There's no reason to do it other than to force you to spend some money or warp you back to town, and money is no object in that game ever, except for maybe about the first 45 minutes.
I've got 3 million gold now.
I was going to say, after a couple hours of play, you have about 10 times as much gold as you ever need, and you could spend so much of it and still just keep getting it back. So
people are asking me, like, hey, do you mind paying $2,000 to upgrade your house? Like, sure.
Whatever.
Another extent, why don't I just buy the city?
The other big thing is that there's so much fluff in the quests. Like,
there is.
Like, about, not all of the side quests are bad, but a lot of them are, and until you actually start engaging in them, there's no way to tell. Yeah. Because they'll be like, oh, this thing is happening, and you're like, this could be interesting, and then it says, go kill this dude. And like, this dude is 10 levels below me because I've done every other friggin' side quest, and I one-shot him and get a reward I can't use, so, alright. Seems there's an awful lot of that.
I wish they did a little bit of scaling with the, like, at one point I thought they were scaling stuff up to a level, but now I realize they're not, and I wish there was a little bit more of that scaling to sort of as you progress through the game, because it's absolutely true. Like, by the time I was done with, like, the first main big area, I was probably, like, level 20, 25, and nothing was a challenge for me after that. I mean, like, for the next few areas, nothing still is. They definitely need to kind of work on that balancing aspect. But the fast travel, at least, helps alleviate a lot of those sort of tedium of the quests, because you can just bounce back and forth where you need to go.
Except when you realize you haven't discovered the area, and then you have to run across the world again and find something.
Yeah. I mean, like, the first thing I do whenever I run to an area is I just run around the entire map, like, grabbing everything, and then I go off to the town.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I think I'm level 18 or so in it, and I progress the quest, so I'm off to like the second big area. But I'm playing a full like a pure mage, and all I do is walk into an area and cast an AoE and one shot everybody. And if I actually want to keep things interesting, I just chuck my chakrams around and go la 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 like Xena. It's pretty interesting.
I did have like a little bit of a co-op moment with the AI today that really kind of, I mean, going back to last month when we were talking about RPGs and co-op, was I had a moment today that really made me wish that, you know, you talking about the MMO aspect of it, that I think they are doing an MMO at some point, but that this did have a co-op online mode, because there's one quest where I had an AI buddy, and the AI buddy just ran into a room and started attacking all the enemies. Well, I'm a rogue character, so, like, they'd run in and start attacking, and I'd sneak in, and while they were attacking the enemies, I'd sneak in behind the enemies and just, like, you know, do the little assassination moves, like, one by one. I kind of took them all out. I was like, that's really cool. That would have been a lot better if I had, like, a partner, like, an actual human partner to kind of move the enemies around so their backs were to me and kind of focus their attention, but...
It'd be cool if they did something kind of like what the Old Republic did with the companion system, where you could have a, like, a compatible class, you know, running around for you. So,
aside from that, Ghost Trick on the iPad, which I highly recommend if you've got any sort of iOS system, Ghost Trick. Awesome, awesome.
Yes. How good does it look? Because I already played through it on the DS, and I would like to pitch them more money, but...
Do it.
I mean, it does... The graphics are basically still the same as they were on the DS, but they've just been... But they've been... But, you know,
are they cleaned up?
They're cleaned up, right? Because it's the whole iOS platform that they've got with that. Yeah, I know... You guys are laughing at my, like, hesitation as I'm trying to get through that. I mean, it's not like they went through and made everything, like, a high-def, hand-drawn art style. They just cleaned it up some, and it does look good, and the interface system is a little bit better, I think, on the iOS than it was on the DS, so...
Yeah. So I will say really quickly that I have also been playing Syndicate and a bunch of stuff on the Vita, probably all the same games as Nick, really.
Did you get a chance to play together on Syndicate?
We're actually going to do that after the podcast.
Oh, how convenient.
Oh, that's awkward. Oh.
Oh, and you're not invited. Oh.
You can't fire me, I quit.
On Friday, my wife and I were out, and Impulse bought a Kinect.
Yeah, and, of course.
Of course.
And, you know, it's actually kind of a lot of fun. We've been playing a lot of Dance Central, and we bought Double Fine Happy Action Theater, and...
did you set your kid on fire?
Jade actually really loves Happy Action Theater. She'll ask to go play it. She's like, I'm going to play with the birdies. I'm going to play with the fish or the fire, and... The fire will come in. Yeah, my daughter plays with fire. Like, yeah,
I want to go play with fire.
So she, the lava comes in and she'll kind of splash around in it for a bit, and then she'll like drop prone onto the floor and just like peek her head out and then crawl around and peek her head up again. And she just has a really good time with it. So, you know, regardless of what else is on the Kinect, I'd say that was money well spent just because she's having such a good time.
Nice. Take a video of that and send it to me.
Yes, please.
Let's get some... Cat, get out of my face. Let's get some news here. The co-op mode in Journey was kind of detailed a bit. And it's a... You know, for those of you who don't know, it's a game about kind of wandering about a desert.
Same
and that's all,
brought
that's
you...
all we know about it.
You know, I mean, it's the same guys who brought you Flow and
Flower.
It's an art house game.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be one of those, is this a game, is this not a game arguments, I feel.
This game's so powerful.
This feeling of isolation I got when I was wandering alone through the desert was only rivaled by that one scene in Uncharted 3, I think.
There you go. Review written.
So that's your Tim Rogers actionbutton.net review of the game in about 1/100th words. But so you can basically play co-op, and the game forces you to play with a stranger. You can't choose anybody to play with. So
I know a game that does that.
Yeah, it's kind of like Dark Souls without the challenge, I think.
Yeah.
So it'll be pretty interesting. You know, that was a conscious choice to instill a feeling of, you know, cooperation through an anonymity, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to playing it because I've liked all their other games so far. But it's going to be one of those things where how are you going to review it as a co-op game? It's like it's co-op. You're playing with somebody else, but you can't talk to them, and there's really no objective other than wandering around. So. You know, what are you going to say about it? So that will be interesting.
Yeah.
And let's see. The last story, some of you may know, was it Project Rainfall?
Yeah, I think that was the name of it.
Yeah, Nintendo has some pretty rad looking exclusive games that came out in Japan and Europe, and they said we're not going to bring this to the U.S. because people have wised up to our ways and figured out that the Wii is kind of boring, for the most part.
I sold mine off 3 years ago now.
Yeah, and so it's an RPG that has 6-player co-op, and it's made by this is the Sakaguchi game, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's
from Mistwalker.
It's made by Mistwalker, Hironobu Sakaguchi, father of Final Fantasy and all that. The Gooch. Best nickname ever. And so Nintendo previously said that it wasn't going to come out in the U.S. They had no plans to release it. Then the internet did what the internet does and, made a petition. And eventually is it Xseed or Access? I don't think the article says. Xseed said they're going to, bring it to the U.S. And it's pretty interesting because this was a first-party Nintendo title in the end, and this will be, I believe, the first time a third party has published a first-party Nintendo title anywhere.
Yeah, so, that's weird.
Yeah, that'll be pretty interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to playing it. The box art that was released looks pretty rad. And I like JRPGs, so screw it. I'm going to play it anyway.
And is the one coming here, it has co-op? Is that confirmed?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Well, I'm wondering if it's going to get an actual U.S. localization or if it's just going to have the European one. So maybe lots of British accents, which could be potentially awesome. So Sonic 4 Episode 2, which for a long time I thought just wasn't going to come out because it's been forever since Episode 1, is going to have co-op.
Sonic 2.
Just like Sonic 2, and probably just like Sonic 2, your partner will get lost, fall off a ledge, and then have to kind of fly around behind you like the little bitch that they are.
Best co-op mode ever.
Yep.
I'm willing to bet that unless they do some crazy, split the screen up when you're apart, it's just going to be kind of a little brother mode. But, maybe Sega will do right by Sonic for once.
Sometimes that's okay in Sonic, because
I
don't know. For the two people without split screen, yeah, it would have to be split screen for it to work properly.
It moves too fast.
Yeah.
So the other news, and this is just kind of a self-serving plug at this point, is that Shoot Mini Robots has a release date of March 13th, and you may recall that Billy and the Player 1 and 2 bots from our humble little site have finagled their way into the game as some guest characters by way of an item or backpack you can wear.
Buck. Yeah, I know. I'm stoked for that game.
Our bots. So that's gonna be fun. I look forward to shooting robots
and
many of them. So let's move on and talk about some user blogs. And longtime community member Just a Bald Guy posted a pretty interesting one. And he says, for about 2 years now, he's been really confused about what he wants in a game. Initially, he wanted all co-op, but, if he's not online and doesn't have a good co-op partner, he feels kind of lost. So he talked about kind of being in a bit of a gaming limbo. And do I see another pod cat? Or is that a dog?
That's a pod dog.
Pod dog?
Yeah.
I have a pod cat. He's right there.
He's delivering my drink.
Oh, excellent.
Your dog brought you coffee?
Yeah, he's got one of those. In the winter, we put one of those collars on him.
all the dogs in Canada have that, right?
It's a necessity.
If it doesn't have alcohol in it, I think you're doing it wrong.
No. Yeah, that's right. It's a nice barrel-aged bourbon.
You'll never know.
Yeah. But yeah, so I thought it was a pretty good topic. What do you actually want to get out of games you play these days? We obviously all love co-op, but there can be other things. Why shouldn't there?
Achievements.
I'll go first here. for me, probably the past like 2 years of gaming, besides co-op stuff, a big thing for me is like really good writing and story. Mm-hmm. Like, my favorite games probably lately have been like the Uncharted games, some of the recent Prince of Persia titles, Enslaved. Like a lot of the games I seem to really enjoy are the man and woman kind of pair up adventure game, I guess is the best way to call it, where it's like
so many jokes.
The non-sexual partner.
Next thing he's going to tell us, he likes role-playing.
Look, I got to say, I wrote my first co-op couples article this past week, and writing that thing was the most difficult thing to find certain ways to phrase certain things.
It's not an innuendo.
That's right. Sorry, go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just, those games seem to be the most rewarding for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of it is because my time is so valuable right now that I don't have a lot of time to like sit down and play something for an extended period of time. So that 45 minutes or whatever I have with that game is usually pretty rewarding. And there's usually a lot of entertainment value, not only in the gameplay, but in the dialogue and in the cutscenes and how things are presented. And that to me is what I find most enjoyable lately. You know, we talked about Uncharted on the Vita earlier, and even, you know, I played it for 30 minutes today during a lunch break at work, and, you know, there's one or two scenes in it that I definitely got a chuckle out of, enjoyed some gameplay and stuff, and that was that. So, yeah, I mean, it was really good. It's a different kind of experience for me, other than, you know, if we go back to, like, co-op, like, there's still nothing better to me than, like, facing a difficult battle and talking with someone about a strategy and how to beat it, you know, like working together, like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. Let's try this. And oh, that doesn't work. Well, let's do this now this time. And then, you know, eventually when you get it working, like that satisfaction is for me unrivaled in the game. Yeah. So
I'll go next. This probably goes back to the fact that I love, you know, dungeon crawlers, you know, a lot, but any game, the sweet spot for me is any game where you can focus on character building. You know, like constantly bettering your character through playing it. Something like Dark Souls and Demon Souls did a really good job of that. You know, it's not so much loot lust as, you know, kind of you get that, you know exactly what you want out of your stats and building that perfect character. Stuff like Diablo works really well. Stuff like Skyrim. You know, I want to play this type of character. And I'm not so much into min-maxing as creating something that is really fun for me. Yeah. And I think Amalur actually is a really good example of a recent game that does it really well. I don't think the loot in that game is spectacular. There's some cool stuff you can get, but the fact that the game lets you build the character you want to make. So I want to be a warrior who casts AoE magic. You can make that character, and the game is flexible enough to make it a build that's viable. Whereas you try and do that in something like Skyrim, and you're going to suffer unless you put an awful lot of time into it to level everything up beyond the point where it's fun. But, you know, like I'd say my all-time favorite game for that kind of stuff is Diablo 2. Diablo 3 looks like it's going to be a pretty similar experience for me. And it's part of why I played WoW for so long. You know, you pick your character or character class and you're kind of stuck with what abilities you get. But the fact that you can spend the entire game in endless pursuit of, you know, bettering your character and giving Blizzard money. it's pretty cool, but that's really what I like an expansive world and a lot of character building. Definitely. And if that can be combined with co-op, all the better.
Yeah, I lately it's definitely, I'm in the same boat as probably all of us grown-ass gamers, where time is a factor.
Oh, there's a website we need to make now.
I already own it.
Nice.
The time when, since time is a factor, I look for really novel things now, and sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but I'm willing to take a chance on a game that maybe has a new idea or a novel idea, whether it's a 99-cent iPhone game or a $5, $10, you know, Steam indie game. Really looking forward to something that not necessarily I can sink my teeth into because I don't have, you know, 1, 2, 3 hours where I can just sit down. And we all know where we're talking about. Yeah, you plan for those times. Yeah. Where you sit down for 3 hours and you're going to play through something. And that's a rare occurrence now. So I'm more likely to just pick up something that, oh, that's a cool idea. I can take a look at it. And if I really like it, if it's something that I really enjoy, sure, I'll keep going. And it's, you know, kind of no harm, no foul if it's $5, $10.
Yeah.
And another thing that I don't know, we all suffer from is trying to get all the newness, you know, grabbing every game we can, trying to consume as much as we can. And I've tried to do less and less of that, mostly just because I'd rather not have a gaming buffet where, you know, you play a game. But, you know, playing a game for a review is different because you do pound through it. You're trying to do it in a timely manner and in an efficient manner and objectively. But I'm talking about where, you know, you do end up with, oh, shit, like, Mass Effect 3 came out, Street Fighter and Tekken came out, Syndicate came out, Twisted Metal came out, and you're sitting here and you've played, you know, 1 or 2 hours of all these games. I don't know. What I'm looking for is finding a game, not being afraid to just find one game and kind of sit with it until...
Like Dark Souls.
Or like Dark Souls, and I don't feel...
Or Kingdoms of Amalur.
Or Kingdoms of Amalur, or Skyrim. And part of it is the nature of those games, but I'm just finding that, you know, as I get older, I want more of a consistent gaming experience instead of just saying, oh yeah, I want to try that, I want to try that, I want to try that, and hopping around like I have ADD, so I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm going to take it back for 1 second and say, kind of pound off what Nick said about story drawing you in. Something that I'm looking for actually is a game to come out and recapture the feeling I got when I played stuff like Baldur's Gate 2 and Planescape Torment, with just the fantastic, the fantastic writing, and all that stuff.
How many of those have you played?
Is that still on sale on Good Old Games right now?
I don't know. I don't remember.
But there was kind of this sense of discovery that I don't get from a lot of games these days when playing that stuff. And a lot of it was the fact that, you know, despite the fact that you're playing kind of an action-ish RPG, it still takes the time to describe the setting around you in text.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, you know, that nothing draws me in like that these days. So
yeah,
that's something I'm looking forward
to. It seems to be something where... games of this generation rely more on showing you rather than telling you, because you don't have to use your imagination as much because it's all there on screen. And I think that's definitely part of storytelling that has gone, you know, kind of to the wayside as we get better and better graphics.
Have any of you played Dear Esther yet?
No.
Because I played it, and that's an interesting
story.
Interesting storybook by way of wandering through a world. But continue.
That guy.
Jason! Go!
Ditto?
Perfect!
I'm just going to wrap up this conversation quick and say everything that you guys said, that pretty much sums up...
What that guy said?
No, yeah, you guys said.
What all you all said. Okay, so...
These fools.
Let's move on and have a little bit of a discussion, because we were sitting there thinking about what we want to actually talk about as the main focus of our podcast this week, and it seems like we spend an awful lot of time talking about the games that we're playing, so we don't have to do the full 30 minutes that Nick threatened. But how awesome was that Borderlands 2 trailer?
No. I had a bullet point list of dissecting IGN's 10-minute dissection of the Borderlands 2 trailer.
Hold on. Let's see what IGN eBooks has to say right now. I reveled in the fact that they took a collective shit all over Rocky.
Put that on the back of the box.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to end up working out for this, but the Borderlands 2 released a new trailer.
Wub, 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 wub.
Did they ever, though? It was, you know.
It was amazing. It's sublime. It's
game trailers just don't do what they did with that trailer anymore. Like, it just, they gave you all the information you needed to know. They put the release date out there. They showed gameplay footage. They had awesome music. They had funny stuff. It was just like,
yeah, I mean, ever since the was it E3 2001 Metal Gear Solid 2 trailer, that's basically been what every game trailer wants to be.
This, you know, ambiguous, just, artsy thing.
ambiguous, hey, look, we're just like a movie. Isn't that awesome?
It's, and, like, you know, like 90% of the game trailers today is show some text, kind of hype it up as there's this big story, lots of quick flashes.
Yep. Big logo.
And what, yeah. But you big forgot, sting. Big monster coming in and...
And cut.
It's like,
and if you can set it to Gary Jules' Mad World cover, all the better. Or something, you know, the juxtaposition of a song that is completely inappropriate to what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works pretty well.
Twinkle Little Star.
Yes.
But yeah.
Someone to do a game trailer to that.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Maybe I should do a Blue Shield Alliance
do
song
it.
A Twinkle
do
Twinkle
it.
Little Star.
Well, no, it's in space.
It should be us singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Get your daughter
Dead
to do
space.
It.
Dead Space did a trailer to that.
Did they?
I don't believe
they
you.
They really did.
Oh man, now I gotta go watch.
Yeah, I think he's right.
They did. But
I think what I liked about the trailer, and it's so ridiculous that we're discussing a trailer right now. But remember all the stuff that was being said about the original Borderlands? Just like, you know, there are 1 billion guns in this game. And
how many did they say were in Borderlands 2?
876 bajillion or something.
Yeah, bajillion.
They just took all the hyperbole they spat about the first game and ran it through a, you know, Iraqi minister of foreign affairs filter. Yeah. and hyped it up even further. And, I just thought that was really fun. You know, they took particular delight in saying, like, you know, play with your friends or play in split screen or, you know, check out, you know, all these new characters. Look, there's ninjas in this game. Holy shit, there's a dancing robot in dubstep.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it was, you know, it made me remember, you know, sometimes I forget why I like video games as much as I do. And it was one of those things like, yeah, this is why. It's just ridiculous BS that I do in these games.
It makes me want to joy puke my face off.
Yeah, it's true, it does.
No, I think...
Well, they got Mikey Newman over there at Gearbox, I think, just does a really good job with all their writing and creative sort of ventures with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So what the date on that is September 17th? I think.
Yeah. So
right after PAX, right?
7 months away, yeah. So no, that's we all know what to expect from Borderlands, and they doing something like that, doing a trailer like that is really indicative of what type of game it is and why people play it. It's pure fun. It's a lot of fun with other people, you know, exponentially more fun with other people. And it doesn't It's not afraid to, you know, joke around and not take itself too seriously, because too many games do that these days. And again, Mike, yeah, to reiterate on your point, like, it reminds you why we're gamers. Like, you go around, pick up some guns, get with friends and shoot stuff. And, you know, there's going to be some cool story moments. There's going to be some cool, you know, high points, low points, some great set pieces in Borderlands. And, you know, if by no means was Borderlands 1 a proof of concept, because that was a super solid game, you know, top, you know, at least...
Other than the ending, sure.
Sure, fair enough, but...
Which ending?
The journey.
The non-ending.
The journey was the, you know, the part of that game everyone enjoyed. But with Borderlands 2, they're just taking that and adding, that essence of hyperbole onto it, and I think that's... It gets me excited, and I don't get excited for games this far out. Like, that's still half a year away, right? So anything could happen.
Yeah.
So
I'm definitely hoping that we will have at least one or two opportunities to play that before it comes out, because I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah.
I really
I'm hopeful that they're going to do more of like their, you know, you're talking about paint a picture with words kind of a deal. I hope they do more of those storyboard intros like they did with Isle of Dr. Ned.
Yeah.
That stuff was good.
Which totally wasn't the doctor from the first game.
I honestly hope that it's kind of in the tone of the Claptrap DLC, where it's just like, this is completely dumb, but guess what?
Yes. You're
shooting, like, oh, you guys were annoyed by the little robot that danced and spat out the same 10 quotes all the time? Okay, here's 5 hours of shooting him.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was really fun. And I like Borderlands a lot.
Do you guys want to speculate at all on the characters? Because that's sometimes fun.
It looked like there was an awful lot of melee coming from one of those guys.
Yeah, the sort of...
The ninja?
The ninja dude. It doesn't look like he has a pet hawk anymore.
No.
Well, yeah, they got rid of, right, all the original
guys are in the game.
Somewhere,
but they are not playable, at least not yet.
Yeah.
I think that would be a pretty cool surprise if you could, you know, if the plot was like, go save them.
Well,
and then you save them, and then you unlock them for play.
That was the one mission
we saw. Yeah, Nick and I saw that.
Yeah.
You go save the soldier from the first one, which is
Roland.
And that was a wicked set piece that they showed off. Like, that was just, oh wow, it was really cool to see him to see him pop up. And I'm curious to see, because, you know, half of that game is building your character. And you have obviously the Gunzerker has been a huge highlight. They did a couple pieces on the Siren, the new Siren. And then from that trailer, you saw the ninja, obviously, as well as the more, I don't know what you want to call him. He looks like he's got a turret on his back with rockets. So more of a
new soldier.
Yeah, new soldier, sort of heavy weapons equipment guy. So really curious to see. I really hope that obviously the Gunzerker and Siren have been explained a bit more, but I'm really hoping that they do something new with those new guys. So yeah, maybe that ninja does do a lot of melee, which is different from the first one. Well, you did have the berserker, but
I think it'd be kind of neat if they, you know, suddenly, you know, came out and revealed that he has like crazy shields, and rather than guns, you know, you pick up swords. Like, something like that would be pretty awesome.
Oh, so he's riding, is that what you're trying to tell me?
Or guns that shoot swords.
Oh, or swords that launch rockets.
Swords that shoot guns.
Swords that shoot rockets, shoot, and then they hit
like
you.
Six shooters come flying out of them.
Oh, that'd be really hilarious if they just like did a send up of Final Fantasy VIII and made like the gun blades
that shoot bees.
The guns that shoot bees with the bees
that
in their mouths.
That shoot dogs.
Yeah. See that? Dogs with bees in their mouths that shoot bees at you when they bark,
exactly.
Or whatever.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was in the game. That's the funny thing about Borderlands. Like,
yeah.
I
could see a bee cannon.
There's a chance that could be in there. So.
Well, 2K did publish Bioshock, and there was technically a bee cannon in that game. So since 2K is also associated with Borderlands 2, I'm going to go ahead and confirm that there's a bee gun.
Bee gun, Borderlands 2.
Yeah. Confirmed here first.
Co-op exclusive.
Okay. I think we've, you know, gone on long enough talking about stuff we don't know a thing about.
I could go on a little bit longer.
You want to make up more stuff about Borderlands?
Let's talk about quantum mechanics real quickly.
You know, I heard those faster than light neutrinos were actually debunked because a power cord wasn't plugged all the way in.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite piece of new technology is the whole thing where they made a time of event stop around a certain point in time, and they actually made it so that the time didn't register, so it's like the event never even existed for one nano of a millisecond or something like that. Really interesting article.
What the hell are you talking about?
they bent time and space around an event so that the event never registered as existing by any sort of measure. So it was like invisible.
Then how do you know about it?
How do you know it worked?
Because they saw it there.
I pushed the button and nothing
happened.
There.
It was like it was there and then it wasn't there. Oh. Like it stopped registering on all their.
Pixar, it didn't happen. Oh, wait.
They do. They have pictures.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? You know what? Science.
Science, bitches.
Science.
Okay. All right. I'm going to wrap this up because we've been talking for quite a while, and, I kind of want to play co-op syndicate with Nick to the satisfaction of myself and neither of you two.
No.
Yeah. So.
Do some dubstep.
You are just asking to get remixed right now.
Please do. I would love to see it. And you have to put the hipster dubstep cat when I do that.
Always. That's the whole show. That's the whole show. Get out of here! Come on, host. Do your job.
All right. So we're gonna wrap this up. Go to the site. The site's awesome. There's a lot of cool stuff there. We have Windows Phone 7 and Android apps and an iPhone app coming at some point soon. Nick has seen it and assures me it's real. You going to show it to us right now? Hey, I see our logo.
Yeah. You got it here. Co-op exclusive. Pre-order now.
Pre-order at the iTunes Music Store for an exclusive article.
Free DLC of Mike's cat with every pre-order.
Yes, excellent. You can still buy shirts from our Split Reason affiliate store. You can leave feedback for us on iTunes because we like those 5-star reviews. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Co-Optimus without the dash. You can leave us a voicemail if you'd like. The number is 646-926-6748. I am Mike. That's Locke. And that's Nick. And over there is Jason. And I'm sure this is a different order on everyone's screen, so that will look pretty hilarious in the video version.
You're top right. He's over there. Down there.
Oh, are we Brady Bunching?
Yeah. We did that last week, whenever the video goes up.
Excellent. That's pretty cool. All right. We will see you all in 2 weeks. Bye.